never exaggerate anything. I'm glad that hasn't changed. It's actually amazing to be here. I don't know who was born when I was here last, but let's get right to it. I want to make one or two points and illustrate them about teaching anything. In this case, Gemara, in particular, which could be a classroom or a chabura. And it's going to sound obvious at first, but maybe you'll actually disagree with me. And that is, first of all, of course, when you're teaching something, you have to really know what you're teaching. You have to know the material you're teaching. You want to be able to answer questions, explain things fully, and be competent. I don't think everyone agrees with that per se, or takes that so seriously. If you teach a different Gemara every single year of your life, you know, it's hard to be an expert in that particular Gemara relative to someone who's taught it multiple times. More than that, I think you really need to know what questions are going to be on the minds of your students. Ideally, you should know it without them asking. At least, if they do ask it, you should listen to their questions and try to have answers that are compelling, both in terms of just understanding a text that you're teaching, but also when it comes to a bigger issue of affecting their belief in Judaism. In other words, you know, if you have a question about what a word means in the Gemara and you can't tell them the answer, you know, they're not going to stop being observant because of that. But if the question has to do with how this whole system works or why it makes sense or why is God moral if he says this and that in the halakha, those questions become more important. And it's more important to have an answer that you can give them. And, you know, some people disagree with me. Some teachers feel like, you know, if the teacher is cool and is warm and loves the students, they're going to like what you're teaching, even if you don't understand every single thing. No one ever, you know, left Judaism because of a kasha on the Gemara. And if they don't believe in Judaism or halakha, it's probably because they're busy with their girlfriends or whatever. It has nothing to do with having the best answer on the sugya. But it's also possible that their understanding of a sugya that you're teaching will affect the way they think about Judaism. And it's not, the answers aren't always obvious. And I'll start with one example. Okay, anyone here know what the principle of Kamalei V'Derabbi Minei means? Okay. Raise your hand if you know the principle. In other words, if I was teaching it in a Gemara and I told my student, if you don't know what it means, go over it to you guys, you'll be able to explain it to them, correct? Okay. When you give your explanation, okay, what's going to be the question that a student would be thinking? High school student would be thinking.
Deserves
he deserves both punishments. But he's going to get killed. He has to pay and get killed. Is it satisfying? Are they going to be bothered by it?
I can tell you, I just gave a number to my guys last week.
Yeah.
And
did they ask that question?
I was asking for that. They wouldn't ask it.
They didn't ask it.
No, they kept saying, yeah, he's getting killed, but no big deal.
Uh-huh. Well, why is that not a sufficient answer?
Well, the victim.
What?
You got it. Well, he needs to be
the victim doesn't care that you get killed. He wants the money. Okay. There's another problem. Anyone know? Okay. If someone is Mechal Shabbos Shogi, right? So Chayim is Shogi in our Pata Mamama, which means that if the bigger punishment was Bishogi, you don't get the bigger punishment or the smaller punishment. So if I, the case in the Gemara, you throw an arrow and you rip someone's fabric on Shabbos by accident, so since you did it Chil Shabbos Bishogi, you don't have to pay them for their fabric to grow. Right? So I mean, what? I mean, it doesn't seem fair, yeah.
I thought it was showing the apostle
how to make this. We do.
Oh, I know.
Right. Anyone here learned Sanhedrin in high school? Can you raise your hand if you learned Sanhedrin in high school? Sanhedrin is one of the most common Gemaras that are taught in high school. And Kamalei V'Derabbanan comes up in a Mishnah. It's really an apostle. The Mishnah is above Machteres Nidon al Shem Sofo. that a thief is nidon al shem sofo, so which means he can be killed. And then the Mishnah says, let's say the Baal Machteres broke a chavis. Im yesh lo damim chayiv, im ein lo damim patur. Ein lo damim means if he's allowed to be killed, he's patur from paying for the damages. And here also, ein lo damim means that if he was allowed to be killed by the Baal Bayis, he's patur from breaking the chavis, even though the Baal Bayis didn't kill him, and he ran away. And now he can't be killed, so he never was punished for being a Baal Machteres, and he's still patur from the Baal Bayis could have killed him, but now they didn't kill him, he doesn't even get paid back for the damage that was caused. So, it brings up the question. And, you know, to you, you know, you've learned 1,000 Gemaras, so, you know, a lot of Gemara, you know, some things make more sense than other things, but when you're teaching a class, like here, come to NCSY Tola and experience the awesomeness of learning God's Torah, and you come into a Chabura, and then this is what you're teaching, and then it's like, well, it doesn't make any sense. Or, I sort of see it, that you want to sort of focus on the bigger punishment, but I really, it doesn't make any sense that the victim is being punished. If you ask a student, would America have that law? Never. Like, a person would never come up with this law. So,
that's important. And that's important. And that gives you the opportunity to talk about how the Jewish system of law works very differently than.
How is it different? That doesn't make sense.
Well, it's different in, I mean, I think on a basic level it's different. The Ramban talks about this, it's different in the sense that we are only given certain capabilities to punish people. We have certain restrictions and limitations because we don't want to, like, I guess, get into, like, complete anarchy on the part of basing them. And at the same time, we're also supposed to watch, so like, you have the times of the, like, they'll have to pay back to be, let's say, Sidi Shammai.
Right.
Like, they're not fully off the hook.
Right. So that's, I think, a really important thing. If you ever teach Kama B'drama B'nei, and you don't teach them that you're Chayel Sidi Shammai, you've done a disservice. It's still difficult. But it's much less difficult. How do we know that you're Chayel Sidi Shammai? Esnam Asr Torah B'la Balima. Would you have thought to teach that Gemara alongside?
Of
course. How do you think high school students would react to that Gemara?
It would help the question in the sense that, like we were talking about before, that you still have like a religious obligation to pay, but it's still probably bothered by the question of why are we not enforcing that punishment. But I think that will cut to a larger issue, like Joshua's starting kit on that. We need to factor in what exactly is the role of Beis Din in the system of Jewish law in order to figure out how exactly they should relate to every single case.
Yes. Once you teach that your chayav is de shamayim, which, you know, I don't know if it's religious or legal, but not enforceable. You know, in America, there are a lot of obligations that are not enforceable. I mean, a lot of times, the person I once got a traffic ticket, and the policeman didn't have all his notes in order, so they let me go, and the judge says, you know, just because you don't have to pay doesn't mean it was right what you did, you know? So in America, a lot of times, you really owe something, but the court won't enforce it. You don't have enough proof. You don't convince the judge or the jury. So saying that you're obligated to pay changes everything. Most times that the Gemara presents Kama B'drama B'nei, it does not present the fact that you have to pay Tish Mayim. Because they're not talking about that. But it's our job to put that together. Because every time you teach Kama B'drama B'nei, you should specify that it's a Petura based in, but you're still obligated. I mean, you have to pay. You owe the money. And it's a limitation of Beis Din, which is much more limiting.
When you tell them that the other Rishonim disagree?
Yeah. What?
When you tell them that the other Rishonim disagree, that's only Rashi and Tosfos.
You can.
That's one of the really examples.
Personally, I feel like if there's a Machlokes Rishonim and they only are going to agree with one side, that's okay. No, you could teach both, but you still mitigated the moral issue by saying if you don't agree with the Ramban, so you agree with Tosfos.
And that's okay to tell them.
Yes.
Why is it okay for them?
I don't think this thing is true. At least
it's much different because when you teach them, Kama B'drabanei means you're not tied to pay, right? You're saying basically like God says, Judaism says you don't have to pay, right? And then it's like you don't agree with that. You don't agree with God. You don't agree with Judaism.
But now the Ramban is saying that God says that.
Right, but I don't have to agree with the Ramban. Or, you know, the Tosfos make it more sensitive. It's not necessarily
I don't think there's ever a situation later. Hold on.
Yeah, not necessarily like that. They're walking around doing, you know, not necessarily like if we walk around thinking Ramban is a cold, heartless guy who wasn't great. Well, if I was going to teach you Ramban, I'd want to explain Ramban. You know, personally, like, okay, this is a little subjective here, but if the, you know, if Rashi, I would teach Rashi as close to the Ramban, because I do that all the time. But I don't usually teach the Ramban that Rashi and Tosfos, just in the order of the Gemara. So I think if you're learning a Gemara and Tosfos on the page says this, you don't have to show them every Rishon, because I never show every Rishon. But I can, as long as you're ready to explain the Ramban and discuss it. But if you don't want to discuss the Ramban, you want to just drop the sheet up, what was the point of that?
I'm just saying, like, in this sugya, it happens to be that Rashi and Tosfos are the more relatable one.
Yeah.
It might be in the next sugya, the Ramban is the relatable one, Rashi and Tosfos are the more
originality one. Yeah. So. You know, but I mean, give a choice to the teacher. If you want to show them both sides, fine. But be prepared to try to discuss it all.
Yeah.
I think that if this is machlokas and one of them is more compelling than the other, the student's moral consciousness, I think it's okay. I don't think that they're going to lead Judaism because the Ramban's version doesn't make sense to them, even though Tosfos does. But if I wouldn't show them the only view that doesn't make sense. So if it was the reverse, maybe I would show both. You know?
Isn't the idea to not be apologetic for Torah, the idea that maybe if sometimes it's difficult or not, if something is difficult to understand, rather than avoiding it, that's an opportunity to teach the idea that maybe right now where we're holding, we don't appreciate that so much. But as we go in our learning, as we go in our lives, as we meet other people, maybe we'll be able to understand where they're coming from. If we can't be apologizing for Hashem's word, we have to be, we're here to serve Hashem. So it's not on me to say I disagree with that. I may not understand it today, but tomorrow maybe I will.
Great point. Here's the thing, Fox. Apologetics.
In the second word, apologizing for Torah.
Why am I apologizing? Isn't there a difference in being apologizing different than showing the full halacha? I mean, let's say the full halacha.
We're trying to inspire guys. Not giving them the full picture is lying to them in a way. Because now, if we're not giving them everything that we
need
can,
to teach them Tosfos without the Ramban.
Right. Meaning, now I'm saying, you think, I'm not going to show you the other picture because maybe you won't understand it morally. But otherwise, maybe it's opposite. I should teach them the thing I don't fully understand and appreciate. To show, I'm 20, I'm however old, I don't fully appreciate it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to kick it to the side. Not everything in Torah do we understand. But that doesn't make it wrong.
100%. On the other side, when you teach your chabur, you're not teaching Chalav Torah Kula.
Correct.
Right? So,
I am.
So, you could even say, like, here's Tosfos to you, there are other views. I don't think you should never teach something else. I don't think.
I just mean not to avoid controversial.
100%. But also, be prepared to discuss it and present it well. It's important to teach that we don't understand everything. There's chukim, and there's concepts to Rabbanah that we don't understand, and it's still part of Judaism. We're committed to it, and the chok effect lesson is very important. But you don't want to teach it every single day. It would be good if sometimes the Gemara made sense. So, if in this case of Kamal Duragmine, if you just teach the plain Gemara, like the Mishnah and Sanhedrin, it won't make sense. If you teach them with the Gemara and Bavmatiya and the Rashi Tosfos, it does make sense. So why is it lying to show them a fuller picture? Yeah.
If we're only going to teach things that make sense to us without the Torah, then we're not really delving into the learning in the first place. It has to be we're learning within the system of the Torah. Otherwise, it's just what I think makes sense to me, and then what am I showing them in the first place?
What if you don't really understand it? But maybe what he's saying is that we're not apologizing for either story.
For sure.
If you really understand what Kirmi Dravine means, then you'll come to the meaning of understanding. That you're right, you're not really, the Torah is a logical system. Why is that not valuable? It's not like good for us to preach to people that the Torah is not logical and therefore we shouldn't understand it. Let's try to understand that when those gaps exist, so we shouldn't exploit them.
Isn't that what the Rishonim do? They ask a question, it doesn't make sense, and they give an answer.
Right?
So, I mean, you don't have to teach everything as a chok.
It can't have the opposite effect in the sense that if we avoid the difficult Rishonim that we would have taught otherwise, to a different crowd, let's say, that when you make these people think that as 15-year-olds, they can understand everything. So then they might get the sense they walk away, even if they're not consciously thinking about it. Hey, Torah's not so special. It's not really so deep. There's not much there. I can understand everything on a superficial level right now. Whereas if you show them another Ramban that they understood Rashi and Tosa, and then the Ramban, no, you're going to have to work and spend a lot of time understanding this. They realize there's something there that there's something to work at. That's what. That's
hold
what
on, hold on, hold on. If you teach a mission to a 5-year-old, and teach a mission to a 20-year-old, you teach it the same way.
No, but I want to say, like, let's just say high school. I think it's a very important point. If you only teach things that make sense to them, then you will have taught them that we only believe in things that make sense. And the second they encounter something that doesn't make sense, then you realize it's messed up. Right? So I think that, let's say, over the course of high school, it should come up at some point that here's the halacha, and then a kid says this doesn't make sense, blah, 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 and you say, I know it doesn't make sense, go you think about it, but this is what the halacha is, we keep it anyway. That should be said at some point before they graduate high school. But I don't think it should be said every day, especially not when the halacha actually makes sense and they just didn't know that far from the tzia. So I just think that if you fully prepare, I don't come in and say, here's the halacha of the Armini. This doesn't make sense morally. I have the solution, the Gemara, Esna Satovu, the volume of. I come in and say, here's the principle of the halacha of the Armini. The Gemara is Sanhedrin, right? That I mentioned, Bamachtes. On that Gemara, Tosfos brings up the halacha of Esra Satorbi Levalimo to say that Yechayav is the Shemayim. So all I'm saying is, don't skip that Tosfos if you don't have time. See, when I teach a Gemara, I teach, let's say, 10% of Tosfos. Any daf Gemara that is taught in high school, you might teach like 1 out of 5 or 10 Tosfos. So what I'm saying is, think about which Tosfos you're doing. A lot of Tosfos are just like, you know, this problem, this answer, and there's no like broader issue. But when you have a Tosfos on your daf, which brings this issue, which reshapes the way you think about this principle, I think it's a really important Tosfos to do. And I think that most people who teach Sanhedrin don't teach that Tosfos because there's a lot of long, complicated Tosfos on the page, so you kind of like skip them, you know? And some people don't want to talk about Esnan Satorah Vila Volimo, because it's really weird that the Gemara is saying that an Esnan Zona, someone going to his mother's a prostitute. Father, how do you think students would react to that? Esnan Satorah Vila Volimo.
This is the Torah's idea of the way the world works. This is the Bible Torah.
No different than anything else in the Gemara. That
are strange?
Yeah.
Okay, you know. Actually, I don't think, I mean, maybe an 8th grade class would be like giggling, but it's actually not a weird Gemara at all. What the Torah says is that you can't bring a korban, which is bought from an Esnan Zona, right? And the fact that the Torah doesn't qualify who the Zona is implies that no matter who the Zona is, it's still considered to be an Esnan, even if it was an Ilai Raios, like his mother. The Gemara isn't saying that people go to their mother as a prostitute, right? All the Gemara is saying is that the Torah forbids an Esnan Zona as a korban, even if it's Gilei Arayos, which means those come with the Rabbinate. So it's actually not a weird, I actually don't think it's a weird Gemara, or strange, or a weird way of looking at the world. I think if you teach a Gemara, the Gemara thinks that people do it, you know. The Gemara thinks that people go to their mothers as prostitutes. That's not what the Gemara is saying. I'm not trying to sugarcoat the Gemara, it's just not what the Gemara is trying to say. The Gemara is just saying that if an Esnan Zona is usher no matter what. So I actually found that if you can get over saying the word Zona, that source is not really disturbing at all. You know, so what I'm saying is, like, think about what are the questions that your students are going to ask, and think about how we can explain it that resolves it in ways that are actually authentic. And if you can't, then you tell them that we don't understand everything, we're committed to the halacha no matter what. But if you can, why wouldn't you want to basically give a better shiur, a more complete shiur, more truthful shiur. Okay, so this is an example where like one particular line of the Gemara raises an issue, which you know maybe you weren't thinking about it before you got to the classroom because you know you just learned to come to God a million times. But think about what are the questions they're going to ask, and what are the responses, and etc. That's on a very specific level. There are other questions that students have that are more broad about like how Gemara works in general. Like, I don't know. What do you think?
What gave them the right to be darshan pasuk a certain way?
What gave Chazal the right to be darshan pasuk a certain way? Good. Yeah, how would you answer that?
Well, how do I answer that? It's sort of that there's this whole revelation thing in Sinai, right? Shem told us.
That's a big one.
Shem told us a lot of, Hashem basically gave us the written Torah, the oral Torah, and part of the whole written Torah thing is pretty obvious, pretty in front of you. The whole crux of the oral Torah is that it wasn't that the written Torah wasn't given by itself. It was meant to be complemented and augmented by the oral Torah. And the oral Torah, we know it's true based on a chain of Masorah, which was Rebbe, the Talmud, Rebbe, the Talmud, the Talmud. And we have to a certain extent, we have a certain...
Are your students biased?
What?
Are your students biased?
Well, I'm not explaining it particularly well because I've...
Okay, fine. Do you think that this approach is going to work?
If I had enough time, yes.
I think it's reasonable. I mean...
Our whole religion is based on
you kids know this. I mean, students, they all know this. I don't know what they're asking. They all know this is an oral law and an oral tradition.
I'd say they know this oral. I'm not really sure how many of them are holding its exact specific relationship to the written law. I think if you ask a bunch of students, like, you know, what's the religion of the oral tradition, they'll say, well, we have the commission and we have the Gemara. And the Gemara was basically just
given at Sinai as is.
No, I don't think they necessarily know it was given. That's... Be like,
it's just the oral.
The only reason I know that is because I happened to have read the Rambam talked about Bereshit Mishnayos, which is really long, and I doubt anyone ever read it. Oh,
right.
I guess we'll see.
Right.
Okay. I don't know what to answer.
You don't know? For that question, how about you have the right
question? I just struggled with that also. I mean, he didn't create any problems with this, like, whatever. What is Hashem? But he just, it's a hard question. I don't know what to answer myself.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, what gives our darshan? Well, there's Yudgimel Midos. God gave us a certain system of drasha, we learn halachos, and you know that's what God said. But there are other things that continue from there. For example, when you read the drasha, it sounds like they're making it up out of nowhere. You know, it seems that way. Like, well, this is the midah that the tradition. But why? How about this one? I mean, it's almost like a joke. People say, like, if Moshe Rabbeinu would be here today, he wouldn't know anything about what we're doing. Right? If Moshe Rabbeinu would be here today, he'd be like, where did the rabbis make up all this stuff from? None of this is what Moshe said. And a lot of people are very skeptical about halacha. I feel like, I would believe in the Torah of Moshe, but this is all this rabbi made stuff up, it makes no sense. And Moshe wouldn't be doing second day of Yontif or any of these other things.
Was it Moshe should agree with what we're doing?
What?
Was it Moshe should agree with what we're doing?
Wow.
You have Tafadar Kushmo, 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 every generation.
Doesn't the Gemara Menachos ask that question?
It would be disturbing to ask Moshe of how they would agree with what we're doing.
Yeah, please.
Yeah,
the Gemara Menachos ask that question. He said, Moshe didn't understand the Kiddush.
Right.
And then it says, no, it's okay because it's Allah Moshe Mishina. So, meaning, that's what the Gemara answers.
What's Allah Moshe Mishina?
Meaning, the Gemara says, Moshe didn't understand the Kiddush.
Right.
And then Rabbi Kiva said, oh, it's Allah Moshe Mishina.
That wasn't a question. That wasn't like a shkafic question. That was just Moshe was upset about that. And then
what was he upset about?
That. But that's
he was upset that he couldn't
understand. Why did he understand? It was just too fast.
What?
Why do you think Moshe didn't understand?
Because Rabbi Akiva was really, really smart.
Moshe didn't understand that
way. But he knew the Torah. Moshe knew the Torah, right?
No,
so,
he didn't know Rabbi Akiva's Torah. He didn't. There's no such thing as you can't say Moshe knew the Torah and somebody else didn't know the Torah. The Torah is a product of the way the Chacham and each generation interact with it and understand.
So you agree that Moshe wouldn't recognize our Judaism?
Would not, he might not, and it wouldn't bother him. He might, that would be great.
It would bother him. It would bother a kid.
Okay, but if we explain properly why it shouldn't bother the kid, then it's
to explain
in the same way that when God disagrees with us, God doesn't recognize our Judaism either. The Gemara says that with his Machlokes and Rabbi Eliezer and Hashem, when we pass it against Hashem, we say, well, what's your name? Because that's the way Torah works. So it's not, if God doesn't have to relate to our Judaism, then why does Moshe?
Doesn't that strengthen the question?
No.
Yeah, I don't
the Torah was given.
That's
what Nicola Mazda
started. It's based on the misunderstanding.
One second. Don't talk to me. Talk to a high school kid.
Okay.
I understand. This is the question. We're not asking what's the answer. We're
okay, so if you're on that journey, if you're on that journey, maybe I understand also. That's not what Torah is. He's coming from a preconceived notion. He's coming from a preconceived notion that Torah is this system, is an equation, it's like an absolute truth that there's no flexibility. You need to explain to him that that's not what Torah is.
Oh, are you being conservative now?
Yeah,
I think it's the Ramban in the Haktonah of the Sefer Machan of Sashem, where he says, don't think everything that I'm saying against Baal HaMor is true and Baal HaMor is wrong. He says, Torah's not math. It's not that 1 + 1 is going to equal 2. It's that every Chacham is going to understand it differently, and there are ways of thinking here, and there are ways of thinking to be explored that need to be put into the context of Kol Torah Kulo, because Torah has a system of logic, a system of thinking, and if you're not working within that system, then you're missing the point. But once you're working within that system, every Chacham who's qualified is going to understand it differently, and that's not only legitimate, that's the way it's supposed to work.
Right. So these are questions that bother kids and adults. Maybe Moshe wouldn't recognize it. It bothers people because they feel like Moshe should recognize the Torah, especially if it's the Torah that God gave us earlier, you know, and we transmitted it. Moshe should recognize it. I have students who are actually worried modern students who are worried when we're learning Gemara that maybe we're doing the wrong halacha because maybe the Chacham is making a mistake. And like, we're actually worried that we're doing the wrong thing. Why are there so many arguments in the Gemara? This bothers a lot of people. Why are there so many arguments in the Gemara? And the fact that there are so many arguments makes you feel that, well, maybe there's a third opinion which is right. These two, there's always another opinion. So nothing's really true. And anything can really go because there's always an opinion. I think that the Gemara, the sources that you raised are really relevant to this. The Tana Shalach Nai story, the Rebbe Kiva story. The Rebbe Kiva story is a story which I think could be used to raise the problem or to be the answer. And it can strengthen the question or strengthen the answer. But you have to explain it, and I think you're on a track that has a good solution, but it needs to be actually developed and explained. Yeah.
What about the Gemara and Eirvin of the Ilu Beilu Dibra Gemchai? Hashem knew if Hashem wanted to give us a rule book of a million laws, he was very capable of that. Hashem Baruch Hu purposely made the Torah ambiguous, knowing that in the proper context, in the right system, the rabbis would be disagreeing. That was the ritual they asked. What does that mean? And he explains there was 49 ways each way. Meaning that's the point of the Torah. It's supposed to be a system.
It's supposed. We're all supposed to not know what's going on.
There's supposed to be, if you're working within the framework, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us midos to understand. That's already just as many. If you're following within the proper framework, there are different ways, there are different masakonas you could come to. So, yeah, maybe we are making a mistake, and then we took a bond, but it's not a mistake in a sense.
Hashem wants you to keep Shabbos. Hashem wants you to keep Shabbos, right?
Yeah.
Right? So, one masakana is that turning on a car is against Shabbos. One maskana is turning on a car is not against Shabbos.
Okay.
One Jew is doing this. One Jew is doing that.
How
does that have to table it?
Okay. Here's an example. Okay. Here's a midrash you probably have heard. Here's a familiar midrash. By Daber Elokim is called Dvar Ma'il Lemor. Afilu Ma Sha Talmud Shoa L'Rab Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu L'Moshe Bosa Sha. Right? The multiple midrashim that say this, that anything that any person ever said was told to Moshe at Har Sinai. Okay? So, how does that fit with the Rebbe Kiva story? Why did Moshe recognize the Rebbe Kiva? Give a shear if he was told every single thing that every teacher or student will say in the future, unless he forgot it. But that makes the story really strange. I forgot. Moshe said he had memory, even though it was on Har Sinai when that story happened. So, my opinion in this case is that there's actually multiple approaches within Chazal, and you need to sort of demonstrate what the different approaches are, and that sort of some sources line up with other sources. So, the Rebbe Akiva story is basically saying that, and there are other stories, there are other midrashim also, I'll just tell you one or two. The midrash says, this is my favorite, and you'll see why. The midrash says that the mashal, the Torah could be compared to a king who had two beloved students. And he gave them each a kavchita and an aguda shel pishta. Okay? He gave the two students chita and pishta. One of them took the chita, ground it, baked it into bread, took the pishta, made it into a tablecloth, put the bread on the table, waited for Kadosh Baruch Hu, the king, to come. And the second took everything, put it into a box, and saved it for, preserved it. And the king comes, he says, what are you doing, my gift? So the Midrash says, Oy la la osa busha, oy la la osa klima. Eza mehem chavit, right? The one who took the raw materials and grounded it into something better. And the Midrash uses this mashal as a response to a person who didn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh. Meaning, the Torah is like this. So, in other words, this Midrash is saying that the Torah wasn't given as we have it today at Har Sinai. It was never given that way. It was given as a raw material. It was given with Midrash, and Allah Moshe Sinai, and certain principles. And Moshe didn't recognize it in his classroom because it was developed since then. So, you know, that's one approach. And the other approach, which seems to say that everything was given at Sinai. And maybe the Rebbe Akiva story doesn't go with that other approach. Maybe there's a focus within Chazal, whether this is true that things developed, or, you know, things are supposed to remain exactly intact. The Ritva that you mentioned earlier in Eruvin also, the Ritva says that Eilu Eilu Develik Chayim. So the Ritva asks, right? How can it be that they're both right? One's Asher, one's Mutter. They can't both be right. Well, he asks the questions, right? Like, it doesn't make sense, and he gives an answer. And the answer is that the Kodesh Baruch Hu showed Moshe and Hashina, you know, mem-test ways of saying that something's Asher, mem-test ways of saying something's Mutter, and then Moshe said, okay, what's the Halacha? God said, you go figure it out. Every generation has to figure it out for themselves. So that goes along with the same approach, and not everything was revealed in Har Sinai. This approach is more, it makes more sense to kids. That it's actually, the Torah is actually improving. It's evolving, it's growing, it's changing, and it's supposed to be that way. And God didn't give us a finished product, He gave us something to develop. This is inspiring to students. There's another approach, I think, which is true. You could always interpret one light or the other, but it seems to me that there's a lot of sources that go the other way, that it's all supposed to be exactly the way it was at Har Sinai, and the Rebbe Akiva story is kind of like has to be reinterpreted or disagreed with, you know. And then there are people who like straddle on both sides. The Tana Shel Hafnai story, it kind of goes both ways, because the thing about the Tana Shel Hafnai story is that God says that Eliezer is right, but Allah said the Chachamim, right? And like that is sticking that Eliezer was right. In other words, it sounds like there was one truth. God did tell Moshe one. It's just that the halacha follows the majority. So, and also the Ramban on Lotasor is also sort of like confused. Not confused, but he's like sort of on the fence, because he says, I feel like you mentioned small about small should be. Right? That even if the Chazal say things that seem to be completely counterintuitive, we should still follow Chazal, because the Torah told us to do whatever Chazal say, no matter what we think. And he goes, but you should really think that they're right. But like, you should really, you know. Yeah, he says, for kol shekhen shish lahamin shall I mention you min? Ki, I've got the language in the Rabban, he says, like, you know, Ruach Hashem ha-mashash t'mitashel. God is always sort of looking out, making sure that the ma'aminim are getting it right. So, but he also wants to go with this correct truth, but thinks it's still flexibility in terms of halacha, that he still to follow the chachamim. So, I think that, I'm just saying, that these are, there's specific questions that come up in certain Gemaras, and also general questions about how the whole Jewish system works. And sometimes you have to just say, accept it, this is how it is. But the more that you can make it make sense, or just show the truth of what it actually is. And I would show both perspectives, even though I know that they may not prefer one. But I think it makes Halacha and Gemara and Torah more compelling to students. And, you know, it's better when more things make sense. So, what it means is that a teacher, or even if you give me a chabur, it doesn't matter. You need to be prepared and anticipate what the questions are going to be and see if maybe you just didn't get to the answer, but maybe it's coming up on the next dot or something, rather than just say, I don't know, just believe it, just because we don't know the answers and we didn't prepare well enough. Anyway, thanks for this opportunity.
Yeah.